Tell us about your poetry heroes.
Well, coming up in an open mic scene that was not a slam, but was very closely related to slam poetry, and that's the poetry night in Bellingham. My poetry heroes tended to be writers that I saw come through at first. Writers like Coy King. I'm not even sure what he's doing now, but he came through Bellingham, and he was doing something that was performative and interesting, but was beyond either a typical sort of coffee house open mic poem or something that was built for a specific performance. One of the first times he came through, now slam heavyweight Derek Brown actually came through opening for him, and he did just a couple of pieces, and now Brown is off, like he opened for the White Stripes on a European tour, like that sort of level. So that was how I got started, as well as, like a lot of young men do, reading a lot of Bukowski and then sort of realizing the strengths that lay there and the weaknesses and the pitfalls of trying to write like that, let alone live like that. But lately, I've really been loving James Tate over the last few years. I like his way with the absurd without disconnecting from emotion, right? Jack McCarthy would be a good example of someone who had a way with a narrative and condensing a narrative and creating an emotional connection. And so that definitely influenced me. For this book, Filthy Jerry's Guide to Parking Lots, I was also looking at a lot of character-based poetry, like C.A. Conrad's Book of Frank, for instance, Marvin Bell's Dead Man poems, Charles Olson's The Maximus poems, all books and pieces that would focus on a character and sort of funnel ideas and images and life, like, through that character.
How did you end up in Wales?
I wanted to get out of Bellingham.
It worked.
Yeah. Beyond that, my family is from Wales. My mom's grandma came over from Cardiff during World War II. My dad's great-grandpa came over from Mesteg in the late 1800s, I think, to pastor a Welsh-speaking church in Iowa. And as far as I know, Welsh is the dominant sort of background strain for me. So we still have friends of the family over there. So it made sense when I was looking to get far away to go to Wales. And they had a program that I wanted to check out. And I did.
I suspect it was a lot cheaper than anything here.
It was, actually.
You were curating poetry there as well.
Yeah. So what happened was I was in this program, and they have in Swansea, which is the Wales' second biggest city, about the size, population size of Tacoma, maybe a little bit bigger. They have a place called the Dylan Thomas Center. It functions basically like a state-run version of the Richard Hugo House, which is to say less efficient and a bit more stodgy. I love Swansea, the city, and I love the people, but the city council has a lot to offer, answer for. They could have a lot to offer too, but don't.
So the reading series.
Yeah, so the reading series, sorry. So there was a reading series there that happened once a month, and it was fine, but it wasn't that inspiring. So I was talking to one of my friends, Adam Silman, a bartender and also a writer, and he said, well, hey, I work at this place, Mozart's. Do you think a spoken word night would work here? And I said, yeah, sure. All you need is about 10 interested people for it to feel vital, feel like something's happening. And so we set about planning this, and everyone I talked to said it wouldn't work. Everyone I talk, I've never met such a negative reaction to such a simple thing. And this is the birthplace of Dylan Thomas. The R.S. Thomas, another famous Welsh poet, lived there for quite a while. And everyone's like, oh yeah, well, no one here cares about writing. They just care about drinking and football. That's all they care about. You're in Swansea. People are dumb. No one cares. Life is shitty. Let's go to the pub. That was basically the attitude from people who wanted it to succeed, right? From people who were always talking about how they wished there was more arts in Swansea. And so we're like, we don't care. We're going to do it anyway. And we did. And the first one, about 15 people showed up and about 8 people read. And it was pretty good. Then we did a Christmas special. This was in 2008. And about the same amount showed up, but more people read. And then it just started growing. We partnered with like the local skate shop. We partnered with a bunch of groups around town just trying to get the word out. And we partnered with the Dylan Thomas Center for a couple of events. We wanted to make it clear we wanted to create a thriving scene rather than compete with the one thing that was already there. And it was called The Crunch, after one of Bukowski's less horrible poems. You know, one where he sounds like you strip away the layers of Heineken and misogyny and misanthropy, and you find like the core, like, spiritual person that is the reason people keep going back to him. So we named it after that, and it kept going until last year, actually. I left in 2009, and Adam took over, and a couple other people, Wood Ingham, a poet and writer in Swansea, and Rebecca Lowe, who I think is putting out a book now with a Welsh press, helped to keep it going, and it thrived for a long time. And then there was some kerfluffle, and Adam left the bar, so then they changed the name of the poetry reading to Howl, actually. And that's still going, and it sounds like the literary scene in Swansea has continued to grow from that, which is really, really cool, because it was never that there weren't people who were interested. It was always just that no one was doing anything about it.